Broadcasted live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
I have such a fond memory of Tito Mboweni. He was finance minister at the time. I was the editor-in-chief of Eyewitness News at the time. And one of our business anchors needed comment from the minister on a particular story. So they called his office and his office said, Minister Mboweni is unavailable because he's not well. And so the business reporter went on air and said, Minister Tito Mboweni is unavailable for comment as he's unwell. I thought that was it, and we all went on with our day until about an hour later, the phone rang in my office, and it was reception. And they said, hi, Katie, Minister Tito Mboweni is here to see the editor-in-chief. And I thought, gosh, this is strange. So I said, no, please, let him up. And up comes Tito Mboweni, looking so relaxed, wearing shorts, a T-shirt, and essentially he came to say to us and to show us that he was absolutely not ill, that he was perfectly, perfectly well. And the reason his office said he was unavailable is not because he was sick, but because he'd actually decided to go fishing. It was a Friday afternoon, and he wanted to take the Friday afternoon off to go fishing. Now, fly fishing was a passion of his, and he was absolutely obsessed with fly fishing. And this is what he did. But before he ventured out, he thought it was really important to come and prove to us that he's not sick. And then he was fantastic about it. He was so jovial. He was so warm. There were lots of hugs. But he said, be warned, you cannot say a finance minister is ill. Do you know that the markets can be affected? It was really quite a special moment and something that will be etched in my memory for a very, very long time. So that, Pamela, is my very fond memory of Tito Mboweni. He certainly will be missed, and may he rest in peace.
Isn't that lovely? That's the voice of Katie Karafotis, who is a Kaya News Editor-in-Chief here at Kaya, and also someone who has a wonderful, wonderful relationship, had a wonderful relationship with Tito Mboweni, is none other than our breakfast host here at Kaya, Cees Dlomo, who's on the line with us. Hey, Cees. Hi.
Hi, how's it going?
We're good. We're good. How are you?
No, not bad at all. Thank you very much, considering everything.
Considering everything, yeah, absolutely, Cees. So you obviously knew Tito, Uncle T. You knew him quite well.
Yes. Obviously, like, he knew my family, knew my uncles from a long time ago, struggle, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But really, I think where I started becoming close to them was when I was at 702. Mm-hmm. So Uncle Tito loved radio.
Yes, he did.
Because he kept very odd hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he would go to sleep at like 3, 4 a.m. And so mostly what he'd be doing, if he's driving around, he'd be listening to talk radio. Mm-hmm. And then either be 702 or Radio 2000. He spoke very fondly of both of those.
Yeah.
So when we were doing night talk, he was, you know, often a listener, and he'd call in very regularly. Mm-hmm. Him and Praveen, actually. And so in that time, then, you know, we just got closer and closer, and he'd invite me to dinners. Mm-hmm. And me, I never missed an opportunity to obviously ask him questions, mm-hmm. because there were things that I was always intrigued by. Mm-hmm. When you consider these guys were the architects of post-democratic South Africa's economy, mm-hmm. I just obviously had questions, and I loved hearing the stories, and he was always willing to share the answers and stories with us.
I mean, what would you say is your lasting memory of him?
So, you know, generally speaking, Uncle Tito was always willing to help. Mm. And I don't mean this in a way that, you know, only if he knew you personally or if he knew your family. I have seen Uncle Tito help people that ordinarily would not have had access to somebody like him. Mm. You'd be sitting at a table, maybe, I don't know, and somebody comes up, and generally he's always very welcoming. Mm-hmm. Even at the time where he became finance minister, where he had security around him. Mm. He always told the security guys, actually, don't worry about it. These people mean no harm. They're coming up for pictures, et cetera, and so on. Especially when the young people started knowing him from Twitter, you know?
Yes.
And I can give you a list of people that I think he's helped. And that, for me, that's always stuck out. That if you are in need of something, he will most likely provide the solution for you.
For you, Caesar, what set him apart as a finance minister, as a governor, most importantly, as a politician? What set him apart?
So, again, I mean, some people maybe knew him differently. There were two sides to Uncle Tito. So there was, I guess, the academic, the aristocrat, because he was pretty aristocratic in some ways. But then there was also a very down-to-earth and humble being, right?
Accessible, yeah.
So he kind of had two sides of the coin.
Yeah.
Very proud in some aspects of the work that he'd done, obviously in the first and second administration. And then very down-to-earth in terms of, I mean, you know, the man would cook for himself.
Yeah.
If he went to his house, he lived a very modest lifestyle. Not to say he didn't have money. Obviously, I mean, the guy did. You'd have to be silly to think he didn't. But how he lived his life was very much, you know, a man who marched to his own drum. So much so that with the kind of contribution that Uncle Tito has had to the South African economy and South Africa as a whole, you would kind of expect that the government would want to do something for him, right? But if I were to venture out, I would think Uncle Tito would have hated that because he wouldn't like the idea of spending taxpayer money towards him in any way, you know? So you got that dichotomy. You're somebody who I guess you want to honor in a lot of ways, but you can even see in how the family is dealing with things. They're not really, I don't want to say welcoming to that because I'm sure they appreciate the support, but they'd rather just do things very privately.
You know, Caesar, of course, people know that you host a breakfast show here, but many also know that you run some very successful businesses and that you, as you said, you know, this is somebody who you could share ideas with. What did you learn the most from him?
Man, so some things I can share, but not in great detail.
Of course.
But I can tell you, for example, in every one of my businesses, Uncle Tito was helpful, instrumental, and contributed in some way, shape, or form. This was a guy who shares contacts with you. And like I say, sometimes, you know, I sleep with my phone on. So you get a text at 3 a.m. And it's a business idea. He's saying, hey, we should do this, we should do that. I'll put you in charge with Dumi. Dumi's one of his sons. Or I'll put you in charge with Pule. You guys should look into this. Just always looking to get young people in action and doing something, you know? Because I always told him, for me, I've got no interest in getting into politics. So then he was like, okay, well, then maybe get into business. So he'd always share that kind of insights, share connections. I've met numerous people through him. And honestly, I said this morning, and I meant it. I would not be where I am today if it wasn't for Uncle Tito. I'm not even exaggerating in any way, shape, or form. This is an honest and very sincere statement.
Wow. Well, thank you. Thanks very much for sharing all of that, Caesar. Really appreciate it. And condolences to you too, Caesar. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
That's Kaya Breakfast host Caesar Dlomo.
The late Tito Mboweni was the youngest minister in the first democratically elected government under Mr. Nelson Mandela in 1994. My memory serves me well. He was in his 30s then. But within a short period of time, and thanks to his energy and enthusiasm, he brought the different stakeholders in the economic system of South Africa to agree to the Labour Relations Act, which was a groundbreaking law at the time, because it was going to change the power relations between employers and employees for a very, very long time. So that was hailed as a major achievement at this at that time. And second to that, to my mind, when he was still under 40 years of age, was when he helped to establish NEDLAC, which still exists today, and it was established as a forum to bring business, the government, labor, and the social organizations together to try and build consensus in terms of the development of economic policy of South Africa. Now, those things required somebody who had intellectual capability, emotional intelligence to manage the competing interests of the time. And for his age, I think it is something that needs to be recognized. And of course, beyond that, as we know, career-wise, he went on to become the governor of the Reserve Bank, and I must say, a very feisty fellow for that position and for that age. He took no prisoners. You know, whenever there were debates around the role of the Reserve Bank and the interest rates, etc., etc. And my personal experience of him was that he took his intellectual capabilities seriously. He had influence in political circles, but also could rub people the wrong way. You'd have, now and again, you'd have to manage him if you are an interviewer, for instance, because, you know, he could just engage you in a manner that would undermine, if you will, could undermine the whole interaction. But at a personal level, I also remember that he was very forthcoming, very available. I invited him in 2001. He was new to the position of the governor of the Reserve Bank to go and give a speech at a function where we were raising funds for the late Dr. Sam Motsuenyane. And because it had to do with African Bank and the history of NAFCOC, he gladly came all the way to Garankuwa to give the talk there. And we had a successful event, and we were able to raise funding to support the Motsuenyane Foundation. And of course, over the years, Tito Mboweni continued to play a critical role in the public life of South Africa, coming back as Minister of Finance, etc. But the other side of him that we did not know about in the past, but we got to know in recent years, was the eccentric side where he would prepare meals late at night and share the whole story with the rest of us on Twitter, the social audience that he had or had generated, including becoming what many got to call the influencer number one when it comes to tinned fish as a meal in South Africa, and the ambassador of garlic and etc. So we really enjoyed the Tito Mboweni for bringing himself down to the ordinary people, but as well as popularizing, at least for me personally, popularizing the engagements and discussions around the socio-economic policies of our country. And today, a lot of people are engaged and I'll encourage them to approach politics the same way he did, in that, you know, politics was always about economics for him. If you understand how the economic system works, then you are on your way to understanding how the political system of South Africa works. So, Tito Mboweni, thank you very much for giving us your energy, your time, your intellectual abilities, and your commitment. We salute you. Hamba kahle. And rest in peace, my brother.
That's the voice of Tim Modise, who really very fondly remembers a dear friend of his. And as you know, as we celebrate the life of Tito Mboweni, another person who's listening into that conversation and is joining us on the line this evening is Professor Bonang Mohale, University of Free State Chancellor. As you also know, quite a very astute businessman himself. He's on the line with us. Prof, thanks again for your time. Good evening and welcome. Just your reflections of Gov Tito Mboweni.
We must truly reflect deeply and profoundly. Breed this amazing, good quality human being, a pioneer of note. In order to inspire and motivate generations to come. You see, up until today, we still celebrate the extraordinary achievements of Dr. Hendrik van der Bijl as the founding chairman of Eskom, from nothing, which became the largest and most profitable electricity provider in the world. But he is celebrated because he also both created and ran Eskom, AMSCO, IDC, which later became known as the CSIR, Transnet and Safmarine. So how are we going to highlight and celebrate our very own? Because Governor Tito Mboweni didn't maintain anything. He started stuff from scratch. So all of us would remember his 30 years as a public servant. But what we forget is that even before that, when he was a student, he was always an activist, a social justice pioneer. From his days at what is now called the National University of Lesotho, which was called Lesotho Botswana Eswatini Namibian University at that time, where he married a Motswana, Tshaitsedi, and they made children together. Even at that time, I mean, we used to visit him. I was a medical rep, and the excuse was that I'm going to work in Lesotho just to make sure that we kept in contact.
Yes.
But Nepimel, you know, even at that time, he was already the head of the economic desk of the ANC, the same way, at the same time, that Ralph Ndijima was the head of the ANC health desk. And they were beginning to think about what would then happen when the ANC became to power, not if. And that's why he was part of that economic cluster that tried to build and put together a number of things. So one, the current economic framework that we are using in the country, he created. The current both monetary and fiscal policy, it's what he created. And when he was amongst no more than five ministers that were appointed by former President Rolihlahla Nelson Mandela, as the youngest, at age 32,
yeah.
Trevor Manuel, Maria Ramos, at that time, Geraldine Fraser, Muleketi, with no experience in running a political party, let alone in government. But look at what he created. First Minister of Department of Labor, we are at the BMF at that time. We gave him a number of our colleagues to go and help him, including some of the most world-class, good quality experts like Ndate Mpho at M. Makwana, who then became Director Employment Equity. His persuasive power was to talk to us at the BMF and say, you guys refer to it as affirmative action. You also have the Basotho Head formula as to how the economy needs to look like as part of the black economic empowerment. But what's the end goal? And when he thought about it that deeply, and he said, when he said to him, no, we want to be treated like everybody else, equally, equitably, fairly, he said, then let's call it employment equity. Today the law is still called employment equity. He'll be remembered for having given workers meaning, purpose, and structure, because he introduced from scratch the basic conditions of employment that gave workers their right. He introduced now this Employment Equity Act, and he was to proceed to create NEDLAC, and it was qualified in the constitution of this country. Even with that, he wasn't happy. He said, guys, I think we have made a mistake, because this is just three parties at NEDLAC, business, labor, and government. We forgot civil society. Then later on, we included the community. He went on to become, of course, the first black governor of the Reserve Bank. When he got there, two new things he introduced. One was this inflation targeting, which was never done before. But also, he was the first Minister of Finance, probably in 400 years, who said, we will have a monetary policy committee on the same day. I'll call a press conference so that we are transparent and tell them what we have decided. That tradition is still continued up until today.
In fact, I remember when he was lauded as the best governor in the world, but governor of the year, in fact, after introducing that style of transparency. I just want you to reflect a little bit on how he, for me, managed a very tightrope of managing as someone who understood you know, the requirements and the needs, as you were just articulating earlier, of labor, a tightrope now of managing the fiscus, a tightrope of also managing the purse of the country. For me, quite fine. And everybody who speaks of him, from labor to business and everywhere, says, look, we may not have liked what he was saying, but he was absolutely confident in what he had to offer, but had an ear too, listening to whoever it is presented their case. And once he was convinced, he championed everyone's cause, even though he may not have agreed with it.
I think he hit the nail on the head, Mepimela, because not only was he highly educated, a voracious reader, articulate, but he also had the courage of his own conviction. He was fearless. He could be in a room and keep quiet. When the whole room says, I'm going to turn left 1 degree,
yeah,
he'd be the only one who'd raise his hand and say, I actually don't agree with you guys for reason A, B, C, D. And when you listened to him, you'd understand that he thought deeply and he was a strategic person. So some of those examples, you see them when he then became the Minister of Finance.
Mm.
At that time, he inherits more than 784 state-owned companies and state-owned enterprises. And he says, but why are we continuing to pour billions in these SOEs and SOCs that are poorly managed by some of our own comrades in an inappropriate cadre deployment? Is it not pouring good money after the bad? Let's let this thing die so that we use this money, the public purse, appropriately and in a responsible manner to achieve only two things.
Mm-hmm.
One, a better, to improve the quality of life of the majority of our people, and then the better life for all, not just for elected officials. I mean, that was, of course, quite contrarian.
Mm.
But he led by example. You know, when people are excited, not only excited, but they were killing each other so that they can have a motorcade of 10 cars. For the first time, you get out of an informal settlement, and wherever you go, you even lose your ability to carry your own bag. Governor Tito Mboweni would rock up in most meetings, I mean, with him to G7, G8, G20, B20. The last one was, of course, in Tokyo and even in Osaka. He would easily rock up in his own car. You'd sit with him in a train, public transport, and he'd sit next to you. He was quite comfortable. So he genuinely believed in the things that he was asking people to do. I was very fortunate because every single solitary company that I worked for, I had an interaction with him. At Otis Elevators, 1996, when I was the managing director of the world's biggest and oldest elevator company, we embarked on educating these MPs, and we took them to the Kennedy School of Governance in the US of A, about 8 at the time, because that's what we could afford. Until we realized that, you know what, this is going to take us very long. Then we took the whole faculty, Kennedy School of Public Governance, here at the place called Van Riebeeck Hotel in the Western Cape, and then we took 132 at the time. He was amongst the very first cohort. Such was his hunger for education, personal growth, and development. When I was a chair, of course, also blessed that we sold the ANC, the head office in downtown Joburg, which was later to be called the Shell House. That's where the Shell House massacre happened, for a nominal fee. And one of the most critical contributions we made was to then share with them Shell Scenarios 2020, because Shell globally was known for its scenario planning prowess. They took this, we took them to a place called Mount Fleer, they read and understood this. They then converted this into a document called Ready to Govern, from the Mount Fleer scenarios. At that time, even in modern day Lutuli House, he continued to instill a sense of confidence and discipline, but also rigor, taking young people to say, you have to go to school. I've never met him once, and we have a conversation without him suggesting, you know, Mohammed, here's the book that I suggest that you read, because such was his hunger to do that. Later on, of course, we wanted to do hydraulic fracturing in the Karoo, but also in the middle of the ocean, to use this shale gas for electricity generation, because we knew that electricity generation capacity was going to run out at some stage. We took some of the members of parliament, some directors general of the United States, where this has been going on 50 years at that time, the land rehabilitated to show that it can be done safely with minimum disturbance to the environment, but that you could really propel economic growth mechanism.
I really, really appreciate your wonderful, wonderful contribution. Thank you. Thank you so much, Professor Bonang Mohale, who is the Chancellor at the University of the Free State. Let's take a quick break. I'll be back with more after this.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.